House passed legislation to renew a controversial national security spying power tool known as FISA. NPR's admission of being a state actor, all funded by American taxpayers, and then a bombshell report on the Associated Press and how they use the Elmo effect to coerce and shape public policy. Journalist Cheryl Atkinson, radio and analyst Booker Scott, and attorney Maggie Thorpe in a lively roundtable discussion. And then the Crumley conviction targeted the parents is a landmark change in how society functions and great implications for all of us. TikTok is spyware, but so is Facebook and Google. So what gives there? Lieutenant Joseph Pangaro, constitutional expert Paul Engel, and Professor Pedro Blas Gonzalez. Censorship, disinformation, political oppression, and state control. It's all next on Viewpoint this Sunday.
Time to put away the bias, the lies, and deceit, and bring forth real talk from real people about real news, providing the out loud truth and capturing the essence of a new generation, all in a fast-paced hour. This is Viewpoint This Sunday.
Welcome to the Weekend News Magazine. Viewpoint This Sunday. It is Malcolm Allout here. Well, lots to cover, my fellow Americans. Welcome into the broadcast, first and foremost, and a lot of big stories, and including this, FISA did get through. This was after Speaker Johnson went down to Mar-a-Lago and talked to former President Trump, and they were able to get that one through the House. Very controversial, a lot to discuss there. NPR, wow, what happened this week? I think we all suspected what was happening, but now it's out in the light of day. We'll take that story on as well as some really interesting oddities that are going to size up pretty well on the front program here in regards to the Associated Press. But one thing about all of these stories is that they really all evolve around where our facts and information and our news is coming from. I mean, that is the overriding story of everything we talk about every week, is the misinformation, disinformation, and omissions, lies, and the rest of it. So we're going to open this up in a bit of a roundtable here. And on the broadcast here, in the first part of the broadcast, Cheryl Atkinson is here, five-time Emmy Award winner, Radio Television Digital News Association, Edward R. Murrow Award recipient. Cheryl's one of those people, I always say, when you think of great journalists, she always comes to mind. She hosts Full Measure with Cheryl Atkinson, is that great TV program, and author of a new book coming out. Boy, this is going to be something. Follow the Science, How Big Pharma Misleads, Obscures, and Prevails. We'll tell you more about that. Also joining on the program, one of the best broadcasters, I think, in the universe. How's that? Booker Scott is here. Truth Be Told with Booker Scott plays on the America Out Loud Talk Radio Network on weekdays, 6 p.m. He's the founder and president of SaveYourRepublic.org as well. And it's just doing some amazing work for sure. Big, big, long career with iHeartRadio and Cumulus Media and some of the largest media corporations. Also, attorney Maggie Thorpe is here. She's a commercial litigation attorney and legal writer commentator. Doing some amazing work. And she's an investigative journalist is what she's become. But she goes deep into these stories and is able to bring out some things that not everybody is doing that. We'll touch on that today as well with the AP. Fascinating. Let's start here. Cheryl, I want to start with this committee meeting, this House Judiciary Committee meeting that they did a hearing this week. I love these kinds of things, fighting for a free press. And you were on there with Catherine Herridge. What a great group this was. And I seen several things about it. I did not see the whole thing. I definitely want to go back and see. How long was this gathering here, this committee meeting? Was it a long one or short?
I think it ran about an hour and a half.
Not too bad. Okay.
About an hour and a half.
Okay. Some of these things go on for days, so I wasn't sure how long it was. All right. All right, so you, so let's start here. This was there was an interesting tweet from on X from Texas Lindsay that said state-run media journalist Cheryl Atkinson says in her experience at CBS, the government intervened in news coverage every day. She says and CBS was constantly pressured by members of Congress, the White House, and the intel agencies on what stories CBS should or should not cover. That is kind of the same story we'll talk about in moments here with NPR and really AP for that matter. Is that where journalism is today across the spectrum?
Yeah, I mean, and that was that way 15 years ago, where we would get that kind of pressure. And a member of Congress was kind of saying, well, you know, that's really not undue influence, because if they're not forcing you, and we didn't have time to expand on that too much, but there is, I call it transactional journalism. They don't tell you with threats exactly what you have to do, but they withhold access. They explicitly will tell the networks, executives have told me, stuff like, if you continue airing this line of stories, or in my case, if Cheryl Atkinson's investigation runs on your morning show, CBS, you won't be in line for the next Michelle Obama interview. And my answer to them should be, who cares? Like, that's, you know, sort of publicity for you. But these are the trades they make. So it's implicit, or there is this kind of pressure and transactional journalism that happens that allows them to influence the content.
So they basically want you to sell your soul to get the next story.
Well, you're not, and you're not really getting the next story. You're getting the next bit of propaganda they're handing out, which is the irony.
That's hysterical. All right, that puts it perfectly, Cheryl, with the propaganda. The next story is propaganda, probably. We are lost. We are lost as society. And we've said it for years, like you just said, 15 years ago. I mean, the fourth estate is long gone. And I haven't discovered it in a long, long time. What was the takeaway from this committee? What's the bottom line in this time you spent there? Anything become of this? What's the summary?
Well, yeah, you know, Catherine Herridge is being fined $800 a day for the past 2 years for not turning over the name of a confidential source from a story when she worked at Fox News.
Yeah.
This would provide protection that doesn't exist, because the courts have whittled away at journalists' protection. We don't have it codified that we can protect the names of our sources as part of a free press. So this new law that would be passed was passed by the House, apparently has been passed before by the House, but the Senate won't take it up. It's very confusing to me, because it has bipartisan support, but for some reason there are opponents to this, just like it's very confusing with the FISA law, that every time the intelligence agencies and those they run in Congress try so hard not to have any restrictions after all the abuses, they don't want a single safeguard put in place. I think that's weird.
Yeah.
But this Press Act would allow journalists to protect their sources and make it also where the telecommunications companies like Verizon wouldn't turn over information about journalists, you know, from their records and cell phones and computers without a warrant. But the problem with that is, as I did mention, I mean, that all sounds well and good, but the lawbreakers in government that have violated the rules to begin with will violate another law. They don't need permission. They have direct pipelines, and they're linked into the systems of the telecommunications firms for the past few decades. They're one and the same. They don't have to ask for the information if they want to go around the law. But it's a well-meaning act that I don't think could hurt, and it's called the Press Act, and that's what they were trying to get attention to, pressure the Senate to take it up and pass it.
What is the state of this business right now, in your opinion?
Well, it's as you said, we needed it to work, and I sounded an alarm probably 25 years ago at CBS when I saw the outside politics and industries and corporations getting their nose under the tent and influencing us. So in a way, not just pressing us to include certain views and stories, but to censor, to place themselves in our newsrooms where they could control content. And we needed to fight that 20 years ago. It's too late now, because they've successfully taken over and co-opted most in the media. These interests that pretty much dominate politics, media, education, pretty much every thing that you can think of that can be co-opted, as I've written before, has been, certainly every information source. So we're left in a state of trying to figure out the state of confusion that you say people have serves the interests of those who don't want you to know the truth about certain things. They're perfectly happy for you to be confused, even if you're not totally believing their view. Confusion is fine with them.
Yeah.
So we're looking for new paradigms, and you know, Substack is one of them. I don't think that's what it all becomes, but people are looking for something that can be a way to sort of sort through this mess that we have now. And right now, I think everybody's hunting and pecking to find sources they can trust on a particular topic and kind of look around and try to do a lot of their own research.
Well, this gives me encouragement, really, in talking to you, because it's the mission and mantra of America Out Loud. And, you know, when we relaunched the new site in January, Cheryl, we put right at the top there, many voices, one freedom, united in the First Amendment, which was our claim to what we believe free press is. We may not always agree with many of the opinions that are published here. They're not personal opinions, but we do honor our free speech and put it out there just the same. But that is a lost art today. It's not, it doesn't exist. It exists very limitedly, as you're just saying
exactly.
But we're fighting the fight, and you are as well. The work you're doing, I'm so privileged to know you, and with your work you've done, I just think it's tremendous. All right, stay right there, Cheryl. Let me move on. I want to talk about NPR here. Just a moment, I'll get your opinion on that as well. And I don't want to lose sight of something you said a moment ago, too, by the way, when you said that it's too late. It's too late. We got to come back to that point. It's too late. But I also like when you talked about paradigms. So let's not lose sight of that. The paradigms we need to talk about, and the fact that a lot of damage has been done here. And I think listeners all understand when you hear me today what we're really talking about here. It's pretty sick. All right, NPR here. Let me get into the voice here. Booker Scott joins me right here. He did a great piece on this. In fact, it's trending along with several stories this morning on America Out Loud. And NPR's admission of total liberal activism. And this is the 25-year veteran, the Yuri Berliner, and comes out, and he recounted the stories. Listen to these stories. I mean, this is a head shaker. Russiagate, COVID origins, the Hunter Biden laptop. He explains all these stories. He comes through a lot of them and puts it out there and says they're all just ridiculous. They're bogus. They're lies. Okay. Oh, we talked about their favorite critter they'd have on the show all the time, Booker. That was Adam Schiff. He was their go-to guy. I mean, that just tells you the caliber of the program. Tell us about this piece, and you did a whole show on this.
Yeah, I did. And thank you, Malcolm. Thank you for having me. It was bizarre to me. When I first read it, the story from Berliner, I was relieved in a way. I was like, well, finally someone from NPR is admitting exactly what we've known all these years. And for someone that always had, I was inspired to be in radio from Masterpiece Theater and people like that in my life. Garrison Keillor later in my life, and he was a companion on NPR radio. But I can't go to the left side of the dial anymore because of how their politics are, and I just stay away from them. And now here comes this piece that came out, I think it was on Tuesday of this week, where this editor from NPR was saying that they are biased and they are basically liberal activists, which is what we all thought, we all knew. But to have someone admit it, it was my first response was, this is a relief. But then I start asking the questions, why now? What is going to change? Is anything going to change within NPR? One of the things that he mentioned was 87 editors, reporters/reporters in NPR in Washington, D.C. are all Democrats, and there are zero Republicans. So then the question comes, the federal money that goes to NPR, why are we funding this when they are almost state-run media? And Elon Musk about a year ago mentioned that they were state-run media, and public NPR pushed back on that. And when you look at the funding, NPR and the people on the left will always say it's a very small percentage, and direct funding to NPR and public television is a very small percentage, but it's also set up through the Public Broadcasting Corporation, which is mandated by a 1967 law that the money goes to them with a board of directors that is appointed by presidents, and then that money is funneled back to public radio. So through that NGA or NGO, that is how they are funded mainly. Of course, they do local fundraising.
Scott, I'm thinking here a moment here. You know, we criticize in this country all the time countries like Russia, countries like China, and there's a lot of countries like that around the world. And we criticize them all the time for their state-run media, for their propaganda, for their control. But we really have the same thing here. I mean, you touch on NPR there, but the federal government has their hands in the cookie jars all over the spectrum on social media and media. So why or how are we any better than these third-rate entities?
I don't know that we are at this point, Malcolm. And, you know, Cheryl mentioned something a few minutes ago that I had made a note to bring up, because I think the 1996, the Telecommunications Act of 1996 that was passed, she mentioned about how corporations started getting involved. And as someone that has been in this business for a long time, you could see the changes come when that law changed. When people write about the Telecommunications Act, everybody writes about Section 230 that was inside of that, but they really failed to mention about what it did to corporate media, which opened up ownership for corporations to own multiple radio stations, television stations within a market. And I think that is one of the biggest things in the last 30 years. I think Cheryl mentioned the last few decades, and it fits right in there with that 1996 Telecommunications Act.
And we bring on attorney Maggie Thorpe joins us, and she did amazing piece. You all have to read this now. The Associated Press used the Elmo effect, of course, and shape public policy. A stunning op-ed. You must read this. Sit down and have a stiff drink when you read it, though. You'll need it. Maggie, let's get to the crux of this Elmo effect, please, and what this is comes through. And of course, this coordinates and aligns very well with Cheryl's book coming out just shortly ahead here. This new book, which defines the science, everything that went wrong. What were they doing with the Elmo effect?
Thank you, Malcolm, for having me. So basically, the AP, which is claims to be the most trusted news source in the world, one which reports news fairly, accurately, and free from bias or influence, the AP basically ran a story in 2022, which was perfectly timed to run the week after COVID vaccines had been expanded for children under five. And they ran it as news. They couched it as news. And this was a pure fiction and propaganda piece reporting that Elmo from Sesame Street had gotten a COVID vaccine. And it's such a great example of how these news organizations have, you know, become essentially captured. I mean, despite claiming to be the most trusted news source in the world, the AP has completely failed to report on and really even blocked one of the largest news stories of my lifetime, that millions of individuals in the U.S. and globally have suffered an injury or even lost a loved one following a vaccine that our government promised was safe and effective.
People died. People were severely injured. Their lives were altered forever. And these people, I don't know how they put their head on the pillow at night. It is sick beyond measure here. I want to read just real quickly this one fast piece, Maggie, have your opinion on. Flashback to the summer of 21, you say here. In June of that year, a widely circulated Associated Press piece assured the public the findings, now documented in the AJOG, would have been decidedly improbable, if not downright impossible. It was framed as news, which is what the AP does, of course. That's my opinion. This piece was actually the product of AP's work with Facebook, Meta, another communist network, by the way, to fact-check misinformation. Now, the communist pot and the other, those are my words, not Maggie's, by the way. But then you say here, Maggie, spike protein produced by vaccine, not toxic. This AP piece, among other things, wrongly assured readers that the COVID-19 vaccines remain mostly concentrated on the site of the injection on the local lymph nodes. It derided Dr. Brian Bridle's claims that spike proteins generated by the vaccines don't stay in the shoulder muscle, but are capable of spreading to other parts of the body. Well, quoting an infectious disease specialist from NYU, the AP reported that claims such as Dr. Bridle's were completely inaccurate, and their spike protein made after the mRNA is injected almost exclusively stays locally. Then you say this, and I'd like you to answer this question. You posed this question in your piece. How could the AP be so blatantly misleading and even flat out wrong on issues of such vital importance to public health and safety? What do you say?
Yeah, well, in my opinion, it's because they're completely captured. I mean, we know now that That they worked behind the scenes. They actually signed a deal. They even reported on it themselves with Twitter. They worked with Facebook. They're members of this Orwellian BBC organization, the Trusted News Initiative. And through that, they work with Google and YouTube and Microsoft and Thomson Reuters and the Washington Post and many, many others. And basically, you know, they're bought off. They took money from the federal government. The AP is reported to have taken, at least on a government website, reported to have taken $37 million federal dollars since 2008. They work with all of these organizations. I mean, they're just captured.
And let me also mention here that Maggie took screenshots. Cheryl, you'll love this piece, by the way, when you get a chance to read. I mean, she took screenshots, and as she got a hold of the AP to get opinions from them and so on and so forth, the numbers started changing on some of the sites, and then she took the other screenshots after the fact. Is that correct, Maggie?
That is 100% correct. So I went in and did this research, and this is a government website that reports on federal monies.
Yeah.
And essentially, the AP was reported to have been awarded over $37 million since 2008. Yeah. As Cheryl said, this has been going on for a while, although most of that was awarded over the pandemic. But it would really appear like someone has tried to make that number disappear.
Right.
Because when I accessed the contacted the AP in fairness to try to say, hey, you know, I'm going to write this story. Would you like to make a response? And then went back to the webpage, that $37 million disappeared, and it showed only around $4 million.
You will not get a Christmas card this year from the AP, Maggie, I'm telling you. All right, let me bring this circle back around now to Cheryl Atkinson. Cheryl, you've got this book coming out in a few months here. And by the way, it can be available for pre-order. It's already in the America Out Loud bookstore and on the front page as you listen to this broadcast. My fellow Americans, but follow the science, how Big Pharma misleads, obscures, and prevails. You hear some of the stories we just talked about, including this blockbuster piece that attorney Maggie Thorpe did. Bring us to a head for us in what you're doing with this book and all the mistruths and lies, everything that transpired here, right?
Well, great job on that report, Maggie, but it's, you know, it's the story of everything. I think the overarching takeaway from Follow the Science, which HarperCollins asked me to write, it explains with a lot of detail and citations how probably almost all the information your physician relied upon in med school and relies upon to learn things in medical journals is bought and paid for by the pharmaceutical industry and other interests that are related to it. So from the curriculum that's taught in med school, which is dictated by the pharmaceutical industry in large degree, to the biggest textbooks they learn from, which is Merck's manual written by Merck. And I looked through there to see what truths they would tell about some of their own medicines that have been controversial and caused great problems and deaths and have been linked to all kinds of things. That's not in the Merck manual. The doctors aren't being taught about these things. And then they go on to their continuing legal education classes, which are taught by doctors connected to the pharmaceutical industry, not always even easily disclosed on the disclosures that the doctors see when they're taking the classes. And then they read medical journals that the journal editors themselves, like Richard Horton of Lancet, or Dr. Marcia Angel, formerly of the New England Journal of Medicine, both say, you're basically just reading ads written by pharmaceutical companies or ghostwritten or bought and paid for by the pharmaceutical companies under the guise of studies and articles that appear to be independent. This is in big part, you know, we explain in the book why we've never spent more money on healthcare. We've never been, we're growing sicker as a society with chronic diseases. Our life expectancy suddenly is going down, not because of COVID, but we're unique in among countries the way that we're taking the most medicine but becoming the sickest in many ways.
What do you think the end game, I'm sure you don't know what the end game is. Any idea what the end game of this whole thing is?
Well, I hope, much like the co-opting of our information and media, that this group of thousands of doctors who are world-renowned and published are breaking away from what I would call established medicine after the debacle that they saw during COVID. And they're forming independent groups where they're trying to solve some of these vexing problems that are main public health officials don't seem to notice why we're dying quicker and we're all just being medicated for diabetes and high blood cholesterol and so on. Well, these things can be fixed other ways that aren't making people a lot of money and we're not told about it and our doctors are ignorant of them or happy, you know, to give you a pill instead. There are doctors who feel differently and are independent and, you know, aren't going to be beholden to these big controlled hospital groups and so on that force them to practice a certain way. Yeah. And they're growing. I've been doing stories with them and going to conventions. And so I hope honest subcultures of people in media, in medicine, in all these groups that have been co-opted break away and provide alternatives that grow where people can find them and get more honest advice.
Yeah, amen to that. I agree. Good has to prevail here in this fight, good or evil, for sure. Let's get to this other big news story, Pfizer, I'd like to touch on with everyone. And so they got this through. This was very tenuous over several days here. Speaker Johnson went down to Mar-a-Lago. Trump had put out some post on this, telling Republicans to stay away. It did pass 273 to 147. It was a very bitter fight about it. A lot of conversation here. Hard to trust any of these people. This all plays into the trust game and what we've been talking about here on the broadcast, frankly. You know, and let me give you an example. Here's what, and I want to go right around here and get, and Cheryl, let me stay with you a moment and ask you this here. All right, there was a tweet put on X by Congressman Dan Crenshaw. It says this, listen to me now. It says, this may come as a surprise to you. It was for me when I found out, but we can't legally use Pfizer authorities to wiretap the Mexican drug cartel affiliates or the Chinese companies that have precursors for fentanyl. We're missing an enormous amount of information about supply chains, money laundering, traffic, and production, all because the law isn't updated to deal with this new fentanyl problem, he says. So today I offer an amendment to change that. It was very simple. Only one sentence. It would simply allow us to apply for warrants to wiretap these cartel organizations operating overseas. It was not attached to any legislation of poison pills, blah, blah, blah. Okay, no brainer, right? He says, well, our colleague here on the network does a show, the Tom Rentz Show, fired back in a tweet that he copied me on. He says, let me explain the problem, Dan Crenshaw out of Texas. We, the people, neither trust the Pfizer court nor the intel agencies to respect the rights of Americans. These agencies are demonstrably corrupt and there's no transparency or accountability. Did you know about the wiretaps on the Trump campaign or any of the others by chance? After being involved with the creation and cover-up of COVID and the vaccines, tapping the lines of numerous campaigns and continually being involved with terror plots in Russia and elsewhere, since there's no transparency, why should I trust there weren't? No one can credibly argue we should trust agencies like the CIA at this point. All right. You get the argument, Cheryl. You see what's happening here. Was this a good thing or a bad thing, getting this approved? This is a hot potato issue. What do you think?
FISA is ridiculously abused, the authority that the government has given itself. It must be reined in. A majority of Democrats and Republicans want to issue reforms every time it comes up. I've heard this from the inside from both. They are always called in by their party leaders who are co-opted for whatever reason by various forces, and I'm sure there's money in the background, and they're told they have to vote to put it through. It's a big fight every time. Everybody knows reforms are needed. Christopher Wray repeatedly goes before Congress and gives false testimony and says there have been no 702 surveillance abuses. Just the little we can find out about publicly is just a horrendous record of abuses of surveillance law, as outlined by the FISA court itself, accusing the NSA of having institutional lack of candor, meaning misleading the court on wiretaps that caused constitutional concerns. After the Trump debacle on the spying on his campaign, when there was a look by an IG at 29 wiretaps, I believe, applications, it was found hundreds of violations in there, the safeguards that have been put into place 20 years before that are still not being followed by the FBI, and no one will reform it so that these crooks that are doing this horrible abuse get reined in. It's just astonishing to me.
It is astonishing. And everything you just described right there perfectly, Cheryl, puts us in the class, does it not, of a third-rate country? I mean, isn't that what we sound like here on this broadcast
today?
Well,
we've allowed ourselves to become a surveillance state by letting our political leaders, and I mean those at the top, because the rest of them want to reform it, by letting them control and do something that few people in the public support, And most of the members of Congress in both parties don't support.
Yet
every time this is what we get.
You know, it comes down, Booker Scott, it comes down to who do you trust the most? Who do you trust the least? And I did a broadcast on this yesterday, in fact, with military generals and others talking about Pfizer and the importance or not of it. But, you know, and in fact, that one was called, here we go, foreign adversaries or domestic operatives. Who is the real threat to Americans? You know, it really is a hell of a question. I don't trust the foreign adversaries and enemies, but I'm not sure I trust the people that Cheryl just pointed out in D.C. anymore. I just can't support these reckless programs anymore. Booker, what do you think?
Well, I agree, but it takes discernment in this world. And if you spend any time on social media, go to TikTok, look at the videos of what people are doing to get likes and reposts, there isn't a lot of discernment right now. And that's the problem. Half truths are the best lies. And you talked about Dan Crenshaw, and I had some fun with him on Saturday morning, too. He wants to add more restrictions. Tell me how that works exactly, Dan Crenshaw. It's a serious question. There are limitations already. That's the problem. They've been abused. More laws and more restrictions aren't the answer, because it's just going to create more abuse, because they're going to get the information they want. And I think discernment is the key. And Cheryl mentioned earlier, you have to hunt and peck for what to believe. And that's where we are in society now.
Yeah, well, like she said earlier, too, a lot of damage has been done, and looking for these new paradigms is what we have to do. We have to create a whole new world here. There is so much damage that's been done. You know, Booker, that's something we need to focus on in the future on the network here. I think she nailed that with that. I keep banging my head against the wall thinking, how do you fix any of this? I think she put it out there. It's probably not fixable. A lot of damage here. A lot of damage.
Oh, I agree.
What a terrific conversation here, and just tremendous thank you to this group here. Always privileged to have Cheryl Atkinson on. Her book will be out later in September. HarperCollins published on this, Follow the Science, How Big Pharma Misleads, Obscures, Prevails. We'll talk about it again with her when we have more time in the future here. Booker Scott, tremendous, doing great stuff. His big article on NPR is a must read on the platform. And that show, we did a whole show on it as well. Truth Be Told with Booker Scott, 6 p.m. Monday through Friday, by the way, on the network. It is a must listen. Love the guy. He's doing great stuff. Attorney Maggie Thorpe. Could not be more proud of the work she is doing. I have to tell you, what incredible. She really defines, really in the light of what Cheryl has done in her career as an investigative journalist. And I will say that because every piece Maggie produces is of that caliber. So there's a lot there with that AP piece. Once you read it, Cheryl, you got to let us know what you think of that one. It's going to be fascinating.
It sounds terrific. Thank you for alerting me to it. I can't wait.
Yeah, absolutely. So, all right, friends, we'll take a pause here. And we have three big blockbuster stories coming up in just moments with a stellar group. I love it. The Crumbly Conviction, Blame Game, TikTok, Spyware. But what about Facebook and Google and Dictatorship and the 1%? It's all back at AmericaOutloud.news. Help us share the out loud truth and make liberty and justice available for the next generation. More Viewpoint in just a moment.
The America Out Loud Talk Radio app is on Android or Apple. It's the perfect way to listen in to the new generation of talk shows and hosts who are ready to inform and inspire.
Cholesterol, blood pressure, blood sugar, inflammation, and weight. These are all real-world problems that 87% of Americans are struggling with. Fight back with HealRight. HealRight is a bar you eat, but it's food as medicine that addresses the nutritional root cause of health issues in just 8 weeks. Take action today. Visit healright.com/outloud or americaoutloud.shop and use the code OUTLOUD for 20% off.
Millions of Americans are needlessly suffering from the long-haul effects of the toxic spike protein. Dr. Peter McCullough and his team at The Wellness Company designed their spike support formula to counteract harmful spike protein from COVID-19 and vaccines so you can feel your best. Go to OutLoudCare.com today and use code OUTLOUD for 25% off your first order.
And we join you back here on the Weekend News Magazine Viewpoint this Sunday. It is indeed Malcolm Out Loud here, and privileged to be with you always, my fellow Americans. Thank you for joining us here on the broadcast. What a broadcast today. Incredible. If you missed any part of the first part of the program, you definitely want to hear it when it is on podcast. Again, Viewpoint This Sunday is heard every Sunday at 10 a.m. and 6 p.m. Eastern Time, but you hear it anywhere in the world on the dial, on iHeartRadio, our free apps on Apple, Android, or Alexa, our media player. There are many, many ways to listen to America Out Loud. All of our shows go to podcast, my friends, and we are doing some great work. We have a stellar group of experts on America Out Loud. Really, it is a magnet. And it's a magnet for truth seekers, for liberty and justice for all. We're going to get started here on some big stories here and going right to the Crumley conviction right now here. Just an article that was put up I thought was very well done. The Crumley conviction blame game is a slippery slope. Lieutenant Joseph Pangaro joins me right now. He's a retired police lieutenant. He is an amazing, brilliant security expert, author, but a great analyst, a political voice as well. He's host of Chasing Justice on the dial here every day. You can hear that at 1 p.m. now, Joe, right? 1 p.m.?
That's correct. 1 p.m. every weekday.
A weekday, yeah, 1 p.m. So there you go. All right, let's jump into this. All right, you say here, Joe, there are very few times in our personal and professional lives that we see a real landmark change in how our society functions. Be that it may, we've just seen it in the conviction of James and Jennifer Crumley, parents of the Oxford, Michigan high school shooter and the killer, Ethan Crumley. And so it is a big deal what's happened here. This is the first time a charge like this has ever been made. How did they do this, Joe, in the crux of it? And what kind of slippery slope are we talking about here?
Well, if you look at that article, and I suggest everyone listening go to the platform and read the article, the concern is the concept is vicarious liability. Now, we're used to that in our world, usually in a civil matter. And the example I give in the article, I think we all understand, is a bartender who overserves a patron. That's easy to understand. The bartender's making visual observations. They're talking to the patron. They're physically handing them alcoholic drinks. And that person is obviously intoxicated. They leave the bar, driving in their car, and they kill somebody. Well, that liability then goes back to the bartender who was physically involved in the intoxication of that person. And therefore, they're held accountable civilly. What's new with the Crumley decision is that we are holding the parents criminally responsible for the actions of their son who went into the school and killed four classmates and injured many others. We're now using that concept of vicarious liability in a criminal sense, which is what hasn't been done before. Mm-hmm. So the prosecutor, and this is what I ask in the article, is this the correct action? Because there has to be specific law to create that vicarious criminal liability.
Do you think it was the correct action, Joe? Do you think it was correct?
Well, it's interesting, Malcolm. I've had people email me and text me and say, Lieutenant Joe, are you standing up for these parents? And I'm not. Apparently, they were very bad parents. They didn't do right by this kid from what we know. But if there's no law, there's no specific law in place. I do not like bending other existing laws and other concepts to encompass a criminal charge.
All right.
I don't think that's going to survive in the courts.
Okay. The way you just put out with the example of the bartender, which is, we get that, the vicarious point you're speaking about. Okay. But that same rule, here's what I'm wondering and asking here, Joe. That same rule, I'm thinking about the parents. They also know, just like the bartender who knew the guy was drunk out of his mind and go out and let him get in the car and leave and served him all that alcohol up again. But it's the same thing with the kid, the parents of the kid. If you think about it on the terms of, whether they mentally abused the kid or they got the kid a gun or they allowed the kid to leave or they let the kid get the gun and leave with the gun, which is just as bad as getting a drunken SOB out there on the highway. So they kind of did the same stuff, I think, in that context. However, the difference you just got me thinking about is the criminal and civil component. That's the deal. It's, correct me on this now, Joe, but I think that is the change here. In other words, what I'm guessing is, that these people, these parents, these others, those people who were slaughtered could absolutely sue the parents and say, listen, we're going to, of course, they don't probably have anything, but you could sue them civilly. But this was a criminal. Is that the jux of this thing?
Yes. And that's what I'm questioning in the article and in trying to think my way through this.
Okay.
There, if there is a specific criminal statute that was developed specifically for vicarious liability for things like this, then I would say 100%. If the parents, and of course, then in court, you have to prove that they knew that the kid had violent tendencies. They knew that he had access to the gun and he took it with him to school. The other part of the article, Malcolm, that I talk about is that how this then affects all the rest of us. And this is the slippery slope part.
For sure, for sure.
Because if we're going to say that in this case, that counts, and there is criminal vicarious liability to parents who knew or should have known, then what about other parents or guardians of anyone who's underage? Say you have, and I cited this in the article, say you have an underage teenager in your home that you're a parent of or guardian of, and you know they are the member of a criminal street gang, and you know the street gang deals drugs, commits violence, shoots people, all that, and you don't do anything positive to stop that child from being part of the gang, and they're involved in a shooting and someone dies. Are those parents then responsible?
Oh, there are so many examples. I can think of them every day. Things we touch in our lives, people we touch and all of that, Joe. Joe, does this stand up on appeal? This case, in your professional opinion, does it stand up on an appeal?
I'm going to say here's what's going to make the difference. And I don't know Michigan law directly through. If there is a specific statute that the prosecutor charged for criminal vicarious liability, then it probably will stand. If there is not, and the prosecutor had a bend, and I'm not saying in a purposely negative way, they were we're all emotionally distraught by these shootings. If the prosecutor used other laws to drag in vicarious liability to these parents, then it probably will not stand.
Okay. All right. Fair enough. Fair enough. There's a lot more to talk about on this case, Joe. And there's follow-up we need to talk about as well in this Crumbly conviction. I even suggest other further articles on this topic, because I think this is such a game changer, as you point out in the piece, and we should not let this go away and not be thinking about it. The repercussions of this will impact all of our lives here. I want to get to this other story about TikTok spyware. What about Facebook and Google? So what gives? Well, that was a message put out by Paul Engel, author, speaker, a constitutional expert, and doing some amazing work. One of the hardest working guys in this thing, I really believe. In fact, Paul, take great pride in always saying he has been studying and teaching both the Bible and the U.S. Constitution, the two most important documents in all of our existence. By the way, my fellow Americans, I will add, he hosts the Constitution Study Monday through Friday, 4 p.m. Eastern Time on the network, and doing some marvelous work. Privileged to have you here, Paul. And this article here, you looked at H.R. 7521, has plenty of problems with actually dealing with TikTok spying on Americans. Okay, I mean, you get into all of the semantics in here in the piece, and people can see this and see a video on this, actually, on this story. Just go to the menu, go to Paul Engel, and you'll be able to see that story. So, but what about this whole thing? TikTok, it is a data vacuum, but everything we touch in our lives is a data vacuum. Even going into a store with cameras and things, they surveil you and pick up data from you and your phones. And there's a lot of stuff happening in our world. Most people don't even know it. So why is TikTok any different than Facebook and Google? Because you point out in your document, you know, they may be one of the worst ones, but good golly, so is Google's Android operating system, Chrome browser, Gmail, Google Docs, all of the crap. What do you think?
Yeah, most of what we use today is a data vacuum. Even if you have, like I do, you go to the grocery store and they ask you, if you're one of their members, that's a data vacuum. And what makes TikTok different is TikTok is owned by ByteDance, which is a Chinese company. And by Chinese law, any company can be required to basically spy for the Communist Chinese Party. They are under the control of the Communist Chinese Party, which, of course, gets a lot of people very wound up and very agitated. TikTok, by the way, is also some of the worst of the vacuums. In other words, it's not just what you do in TikTok. They turn on your camera. They listen on the microphone. They do a lot of data vacuum. But again, like you mentioned, a lot of Google apps do the same thing. Facebook. X not as much as it used to, but
that's right.
All this stuff is being vacuumed up. And of course, because of the Chinese connection, it gets a lot of political.
Well, you know, it's funny you say that, but you know, up top of the broadcast, we were talking about, you know, when you say, oh, because of the China, and I hear you, Paul, I'm not disputing that specifically, but I will say this, you listen to some of the stories we talk about here today on this broadcast, and you almost could say, well, I wonder if the Chinese back there in their home say, well, because of the American connection. In other words, the distrust and the deceit in our American media, we're no better than a third world entity ourselves, Paul.
In a lot of ways, yes. But as I was saying, it's because it's a political trigger. Mm-hmm. You know, it's not a technical question. Mm-hmm. It's not even a legal question. Right. You mentioned that data is going to the communist Chinese, and a lot of the political people, their heads explode and run around going, "We got to do something. We've got."
Well, I don't
to
want
do
my data going to the federal government either, Paul. I mean, because they suck as well, by the way.
Yeah, and they're vacuuming up data, and I've done articles and reports about how they've been found. The 702, Section 702 of FISA, yeah, has been used to spy on Americans.
Yeah.
How you know, the FBI and the CIA and the and other organizations, okay, have worked with social media to track down.
Oh yeah. Oh, yeah.
The FBI even has the federal government has a database hosted by the University of Maryland that lists under, you know, possible domestic terrorists. They have subgroups like anti-abortion, anti-LGBT, and Christian.
How many rooms you think I'm in, Paul, here? They have a whole room in the Utah desert called Out Loud, by the way. So that's for darn sure. We have hallways and corridors in there of that. Let me ask you, you say here, if Congress were competent, well, that's a hell of a statement. That's an oxymoron
If, yes.
If Congress, that if is pretty large. If Congress were competent and truly concerned about application spying on the American people, well, they would draft legislation that actually protected us. How would they do that, Paul?
Well, there's a couple of things you have to recognize from a constitutional standpoint. The reason, because TikTok is owned by ByteDance, which is a foreign company, the question of foreign commerce comes in. And Congress has a legal authority to regulate commerce with foreign nations. The problem is they're not, this legislation doesn't deal with commerce at all. What they have to look at is the actual collection and protection of data. When you think of the Fourth Amendment, your right to unreasonable search, it's really focused on, you know, being secure in our persons, papers, and effects, physical things. And we've never bothered to update the Fourth Amendment to say, what about digital data about me? And that's the biggest problem. If we really wanted to protect the American people from this spying, mm-hmm, we would have to amend the Constitution, basically take the Fourth Amendment and say, not only is it persons, houses and papers and effects, but data about you, data you create and data about you.
Hmm.
And that's not the direction we're going. Rather, Congress is political grandstanding.
Yeah.
Nothing that this bill would do actually stops or inhibits or prohibits in any way, shape, or form TikTok or any other company vacuuming up this data, sending it to foreign nations, sending it to a domestic, to our own governments, and then using it against us.
Well, that's the problem. The lines have blurred so much now between the foreign adversaries and the domestic enemy that we can't tell the difference any further now because we're under attack here on all sides here. You know, let me ask you, before I introduce Professor here, Lieutenant Joe, do you use TikTok by chance?
I do not. I specifically do not use TikTok.
Oh, okay.
Though I do participate in other social media.
Do you use Facebook and Google, Facebook, Google, or any of this other stuff?
Yes, Facebook, Google, Truth Social, and X.
Oh, okay, gotcha. Now, Facebook and Google are pretty bad. They're pretty serious. They're probably, I think they're about as bad as TikTok. The only thing is they're, instead of sending it to the CCP, they're sending it to the political operatives, the bureaucratic state in D.C. Isn't that a problem?
It is. Your personal information, your personal choices, all should be kept personal. But we do all sign off on that when we take an account. We check that little box that says we understand the rules, but nobody ever reads it.
Well, you can't, right? It said the fine language. You know how we all go down to the end and just check the boxes we want to get the software loaded or the program loaded or whatever, right, Joe? You know,
that's absolutely correct. Nobody really reads that and pays attention or understands what the consequences could be.
They could be doing all kinds of things. You could be signing ownership of your home away. We don't even know what the hell that looks like. But wow, imagine what's in those documents we've signed over the years, my friends. By golly, we'd be shocked if we knew, I'm afraid. All right, stay right there, guys, Joe, Paul. And let me bring on now also Professor Pedro Blas Gonzalez is here. He's a professor of philosophy at Barry University, Miami Shores, Florida. His book, Philosophical Perspective on Cinema, is a very deep dive and very interesting look at that world. And that is in the America Out Loud bookstore, and that bookstore is everywhere. And by the way, Paul's books and Lieutenant Joe's books are also in the store. They all are marvelous authors, really, really. Professor, you had a piece. Let's bring this all to a head and we can open this up. Dictatorship on the 1%. And you talk about a time when Western democratic governments were for the people. I guess this was before our time. I don't know. But or when we were in diapers, maybe. Well, I guess let me ask you that question. Can we recognize that from any time of our existence, Professor, or has it or not?
Well, you recognize it up to World War II. By the 60s, that's already dwindling in. The big collapse came with Obama, no doubt about it. You have to understand that the government by the people is a threat to the people that are saying this is a model that is outdated. We don't want that. What we want is a so-called democracy that does its bidding to, you know, the 5-10% that run the world today. Let's call it that. If you take a look at communist nations, say take Cuba, take Korea, take China. The people are behind the times here. They don't understand that that's what the oligarch is. They run the place. They run the place. And so these people have been, you know, they bought these oligarchs thinking that they're going to rule. And then they are, at least to the time that they're useful. And so, no, it's not about the people. The elections are really a Band-Aid. It's unfortunate. But there's a serious buzz in the streets. And it's my next article with you here, Malcolm. There's a buzz in the street about the idea of democracy is finished. And the left is basically saying to you, we are telling you on purpose here that it's finished. We're not going to let you vote and have a representation. We know more than you. We're the so-called, the college graduates with the smart set, I call it. They're not intelligent, but they're smart, but they're crafty and they are evil. And so democracy has gone to hell. And we've seen that the testing grounds for that have been lately this virus and the stolen elections and all that. And it's only the tip of the iceberg.
Yeah, for sure. Up top of the broadcast, Professor, we're talking with a terrific conversation, but Cheryl Eckerson had pointed something very serious out when we were talking about the NPR story this week, the Associated Press bombshell report on the front page of America Out Loud Talk Radio right now from attorney Maggie Thorpe. We were talking about the Pfizer abuses and the fact that House just got that through. And all of these big stories, as well as the free college for everybody from the administration, you know, she points out and she says in a very serious tone, a little bit into the conversation, you know, and I posed some question to her and she said, I think there's too much damage. How can we fix? The damage is severe. She was pointing out she blew the whistle 15, 20, 25 years ago with CBS News and said what they were doing was so wrong. It's the same thing they're all doing today, but it's on steroids today. So she said, there's too much damage. There is no fixing that now. It's done. The only thing we can do, she said, is to create new paradigms. What do you say to that?
Oh, absolutely. Okay. Absolutely. She is in the inside. Yeah, she's in the inside. We're seeing these undercover reports of people working for the CIA, people working for the FBI, laughing at how they get away with whatever they want. This is already an arm of a political party. And she is correct. She is correct. The American people need to wake up to the understanding that what used to be the free press, the big three, four, or five, are in fact just operatives for the leftist government. Why? Because this is a Maoist example of how we are going to operate. This is the final push for the cultural war. We will dumb them down. We've been doing that for a long time. And then we will take away their press. I mean, the press, the 6 o'clock news, the midday news, that's laughable. It really is laughable. It's that, you know, unfortunate.
So yeah. She is correct that that rot is inside, and it's not a coincidence. It used to be that you listen to Dan Rather and you say, you know, he's a liberal. He's, you know, the 80s. I remember thinking he's a liberal, but he was a liberal. No, no, this is no longer their liberals. This is a plan that is part of their operatives of the New World Order. The press is doing that.
Well, and, you know, to your point, they took over the liberal mindset. So these people have been vacuumed and sucked into the parade, I think. That's what I see, Professor, you know.
They've taken over the
whole Democrat Party, it seems, right?
And it's not even a Democrat Party. They call it that. They have to call it that. These people are super crafty. They do not tell you, look at me, look at my words. I am the devil. They don't say I am the devil. They say the devil doesn't exist.
Wow.
You understand?
Wow.
This is the way that they make the inroads on the woke and et cetera. So, for example, if you take the woke business, these all woke types are useful idiots. When the you know what hits the fan and they are totally consolidated power, it may just happen after November. Yeah. You will see these people sent to prison camps because they're not useful anymore, even though the wokeness makes them enemies of the people that woke them, if you understand what I'm getting at.
Oh, yes.
So now it's a countermeasure. It's a countermeasure.
No, I hear you loud and clear, Professor. Very good. Let me go right around the room quickly. Give everyone, I'd like to do a wrap up here, 30 seconds each here. Lieutenant Joe, pick up on what Professor Pedro Blas Gonzalez says there. I mean, it's pretty depressing conversation when you look at the state of our nation right now in regards to this conversation we're having. Your final thoughts, sir?
Yes. If let's go 30,000 feet in the air and take a look down. What I have said on my show on Chasing Justice many times is the default position of humanity is to live under tyranny. And we're seeing that redevelop again, once again. And as part of what the professor said, the change, the paradigm shift, the last times we've had major paradigm shifts like this was in 1775. And we saw how we had to change that paradigm. And then again in 1861 to change the paradigm. So finding new solutions is not as easy as it potentially sounds, but you can see we are certainly on that road.
Wow. That is brilliantly said, my friend. Paul Engel, picking up on what Lieutenant Joe says there and what Professor says, I got to remind everybody here, we're just a short hop away from 250 years. Our semi-quincentennial is right in the front of us right now. A new president will take office in 2025. And then in the year of our Lord 2026, this country is going to be in some kind of a moment. Wow. Looking at that moment right now, what do we look like, Paul?
Well, you know, listening to the professor, the phrase that came to mind was useful idiots. And I cover a lot in what I'm writing and what I'm talking about is we keep looking for someone to save us. George Washington warned us about this in his farewell address that we will search for someone to protect us. And sooner or later, someone's going to use that to their own advantage to take over. And we've been seeing it. There's a reason why John Jay said every member of the state ought to read and study the Constitution of his country and teach the rising generation to be free.
Amen.
So that we'll know when our rights are being violated.
Yeah.
Most Americans have no clue.
Yeah.
It's what feels better.
And
we'll be prepared to defend and assert them. And we're not.
And Paul, you are to be commended. You are one of my favorites. You're just the work you're doing is it's just brilliant. It's amazing. I can't tell you how much I appreciate you, buddy.
You work
incredibly hard with all the work you put out there on the network. And we so love you here. And blessed to have you part of our team here. It's important to say that, friends out there, to compliment those around us who are doing that. And what a brilliant program today is. I'll tell you, I wish I had another hour, but sadly, I do not. I am out of time here. I will have all of these beautiful people back again, I assure you. Tremendous thank you to Cheryl Atkinson up top of the broadcast, Booker Scott, one of the best broadcasters in the business, and attorney Maggie Thorpe. Amazing. The pieces they've done, just amazing. Lieutenant Joseph Pangaro, Professor Pedro Blas Gonzalez, Paul Engel. And my friends, thank you, of course, to mention, and we can't have a broadcast without you. And thank you for joining me on the mission here. It's time to get involved and get loud, America.